Welcome to the Writer's Market Podcast, which is focused on helping writers find more success with their writing. I'm your co-host, Robert Lee Brewer.
And I'm your co-host, Brian A. Clems.
Together, we're Robert and Brian, and this is our show.
The Writer's Market Podcast is hosted by writersmarket.com and the Writer's Digest Writing Community, a division of F&W, a content and e-commerce company.
Let's see what's on tap today. All right, welcome to another Writer's Market Podcast. In this episode, we're going to be talking to Doug White of The Creative Group. So, Brian, I know it's been like kind of a busy summer. What have you been up to?
I've been super busy this summer running around speaking at a lot of conferences. I did the Right Now conference in Raleigh. I was at Irma Bombach. I was in Denver. I've been kind of all over the place this year, which is great. It's one of my favorite things to do is go to writers' conferences. You meet a lot of wonderful people. I get to connect with agents there. Writers get to connect with agents there. And, you know, just being part – you, like me, are part of the writing community. I mean, we're writers, we're authors. It's nice to sit down with other people who are going through similar things that either we go through or are going through or have been through. And being able to help anyone is just a wonderful thing. I know Writer's Digest has one of the biggest, best writing conferences that there is that takes place in New York City. I know you just spoke at the most recent one. I know you've done these for years. What do you think that writers should be doing when they go to writers' conferences?
Yeah, that's a good question. And and you're right about the Writer's Digest conference being such a big thing. I think we had over 1,000 people attend. We have that agent pitch slam where people have like 3 minutes to pitch an agent. It's like so cool to watch that happening. But to get to your question, I think like the best thing is kind of twofold for me. Is like the first, like you just want to plan ahead and kind of have a game plan as you're getting in there, and kind of know what you're up against, know where you want to be, and be willing to change the plan as you're there. But the most important thing, I think, as far as building your writing career is all these connections that you're hopefully making at the conference, that you follow up with them after the event, because following up is so important for keeping those connections and building those relationships. And that could be as simple as sending an email, trying to find them on a social media platform like Twitter or Facebook, and friending them or following them. And, you know, just keep that communication going on afterwards. What's your best tip, Brian?
My best tip really is this. It kind of goes along with yours, which is in order to make those connections, you really have to check your introvert at the door. I know this only applies to some, but a lot of writers do have that nervousness. They, you know, sometimes we take on writing because it's a job that you do at home by yourself and you don't really have to connect with others while you're doing that. But if you are going to really take advantage of being at a writing conference, the first thing you want to do is make sure that you are willing to go in and talk to anybody who's willing to talk to you, whether that be another writer, whether that be an agent, a speaker, an editor, an author, even the people working the event. The goal here is to learn as much as you can and make as many connections as you can. And I also suggest to people often that they should, as soon as they get in and when they're talking to people, the three things they should always bring up in a conversation are: one, their name; two, where they are from; and three, what they write and what genre and what topic or what category. And I think these three things are key, because if you're discussing these with people, you'll find others from your area who write. And or you may find someone in specific who also writes science fiction like you write science fiction. And by doing that, you put yourself in a position to maybe form a writing group or a critique group where you can critique each other's work. I know often when I speak at events, people ask that question all the time. They're like, how can I find beta readers for my work? And I was like, look around you. You're filled with beta readers here. I said, the only thing you need to keep in mind is that you also have to serve as a beta reader for others. Hopefully that will make a difference.
Yeah, and those are great tips. I mean, you know, one of the main reasons for going to conference, of course, is education, but it's also making those bonds and building, you know, that term networking, which, you know, sometimes sounds kind of crazy, but, you know, just think of it as relationship building, I guess. And, you know, really talking to people is important. And we're about to talk to Doug White of the Creative Group. But first, let's listen to three things. Welcome to Three Things, the part of the Writer's Market podcast that takes a look at three specific things writers need to do to find more success with their writing. In this podcast, we're going to look at the three ways of following up. As an editor, I can say without a doubt that following up is one of the true signs of a professional. In fact, writers who effectively follow up are much more likely to receive assignments from me. So let's look at effective times to follow up. First, follow up on submissions. If there's a typical response time in the submission guidelines, wait for that time to elapse before following up. If there's not a response time given, I'd advise following up a month after submitting, unless your pitch is super timely. Be professional and phrase your follow-up in a way that doesn't point fingers or come off as an accusation. Rather, say something along the lines of, "Hey, just checking in on a submission I sent on X date, and was wondering if there's anything else you need from me," or something along those lines. Second, follow up on rejections. Rejections are part of the business, but you can still use these moments as an opportunity to make a good impression on an editor or agent. When you receive a rejection, thank the person for the response and ask when the next submission period is. Or thank the person while also including a new idea or two. Both are strategies that have worked on me as an editor. Third, follow up on payment. You just got paid, so the whole submission to payment process is over, right? Not for the smart freelancer who wants to build relationships and get repeat assignments. As soon as you receive payment, follow up with the editor to let them know, "Hey, I received the payment. Thanks so much. By the way, I have some new pitches for you, and here they are." If you did a great job, then editors will appreciate knowing they can come back to you for future assignments. In the business of freelance writing, professionalism is key, and there are few things more professional than a writer who follows up. Until next time, keep writing and marketing what you write. All right, we have with us today Doug White. Doug is a writer, editor, and content strategist. He has nearly 20 years of professional communications experience. During his career, he's done writing, editing, and strategy work for an array of websites, blogs, magazines, newspapers, and trade publications. He launched Doug White Communications LLC in 2004 and serves as the editor of the Creative Group blog, a career website for creative professionals. Doug has been on both sides of the coin. He's been a successful freelancer, and he hires freelancers. Doug has a master's degree in mass communications from the University of South Florida. He lives in Ohio with his wife, a fellow writer, and two kids. Welcome to the show, Doug.
Hello, how are you guys?
Doing great. So I guess the best place to get started is at the beginning. So could you kind of lead us through, how did you get started writing?
I was one of those people that just knew that writing was going to be, for me, it was going to be my career. I started in high school. I wrote for the school newspaper. I stayed with it. I went to college and worked for the college paper. And when I was 20, I got a sports reporting gig for the daily newspaper where I was, which was the Press of Atlantic City. So I've been reporting or writing professionally since I was 20. I just turned 40, which I can't believe. But yeah, so it's been two decades of professional writing. My first professional job after college was actually with a weekly newspaper owned by Geraldo Rivera and run by his wife, which was a very interesting experience.
And, I bet.
Yeah. So I worked there for a year reporting in Red Bank, New Jersey. and then decided I wanted to go a little deeper, and I went to graduate school and studied journalism and mass communications at the University of South Florida. So writing really for me has been something that's has always been a passion and an interest. And from there, went on to do magazine work, started my own firm, consulted and did a lot of work with any number of types of outlets and publications. And it's been an interesting writing journey. And it's really interesting to me now because my son, who's 7, is a voracious reader and is sort of reading things well beyond his years. And I'm seeing him develop a passion for writing too. So this is a good time to do an interview like this because it's been top of mind in our family lately.
Very cool. That's what I know Brian and I both can relate to that with our kids, you know, getting into the writing stuff, so in the reading. And I think we need to totally reshift the focus of this interview to Gerardo Rivera's wife's newspaper. just give us the lowdown on everything that's happened for the next 30 minutes and we'll be good.
Yeah, this will be our most popular podcast ever. open it up to quite a wide audience. Now, did you know, like you knew from a relatively early age, like a lot of us, that you wanted to be a writer? Were you viewing yourself as a newspaper writer down the road? Did you really want to move into magazine? Like, walk us through that thought process of what you had planned to do versus what you kind of eventually started to do.
I've always been interested in writing for the public. So newspapers and magazines was core to my interests, and I knew that from a very early age. With the way things have gone with the field of journalism the last decade plus, that, you know, at one point, I think a lot of people my age sort of thought like, oh, eventually newspapers will die on, you know, die out. I don't think anyone expected the disruption that's occurred. And for, you know, initially I was a newspaper guy. But I think I sort of saw the writing on the wall a little earlier than some people. I transitioned over to magazines and since then went into doing more corporate communications consulting work. But for me, I don't know if you guys are like this as well, but I know this is sort of odd for a writer to say, but I don't really journal. I don't write for myself. If I'm going to write something, if I'm going to put the energy into writing something, I want to share it. So if I do a personal essay, it's for public consumption or to be shared somehow. But yeah, I've always sort of looked at writing as something to do, you know, to share and to put out there in the world.
I think you probably resonate with a lot of our listeners too, because not everyone on this podcast is looking to write short stories or novels. In fact, a lot of people that are listening really are trying to build a career where they're earning money, you know, weekly, monthly, that kind of thing. So I think you're not alone in that, and I think you'll have a lot of good advice for that kind of thing. Can you talk a little bit about – when you were working for, was it How Magazine, I think you said? And when you were an editor there and taking on freelancers, working with people, you know, what was it like? What were you looking for in a freelance contributor?
The experience of being an editor and working with freelance writers, like at How, that was, so How Magazine is a publication for designers and other creative professionals. And up until that point, I had largely been writing for other publications. So this was probably 2002. And I started working with freelancers, and that was like hugely beneficial to my career and development, because I learned what worked and what didn't, and the type of approach that editors want and need, and you know, how to make their lives easier, because I saw people that did it really, really well, and I tried to model them. And then I saw people who did things that, you know, did not work. And I avoid those pitfalls like the plague, you know, in my own career. But for me, and, you know, now with the creative group I work with, you know, I have this small stable of like really talented, experienced writers. But I think what I look for most besides, you know, obviously I look for writing ability, but there's so much else to being a successful freelancer, in my opinion. It's, you know, it's not just writing ability. It's also about soft skills. It's how do you approach someone? How do you respond to feedback and constructive criticism? You know, one of a colleague of mine once said, and it just stuck with me, but it's like, if you're on time, you're late. And she, I think she was referring to meetings, but I always, you know, especially in the early going, if you're early in your freelance career, like, don't make your deadlines, like, beat your deadlines. Be responsive to emails. Be, you know, answer the phone if you get a call. It's, you know, I sort of view my career in, as, you know, when I was a freelancer, people say, oh, you're a freelancer. And I would sometimes bristle at that because I tried to view myself more as an entrepreneur, as a business owner, somebody who was client and customer, you know, customer service oriented and client focused, you know, really just trying to deliver good, solid content, but also everything that surrounds that, you know, the communications, the emails, sending thank yous for opportunities. So that's what I try to do. And that's what I really appreciate and look for in people that I hire.
Yeah, I think that's great advice, especially if you're trying to build a relationship with a magazine or a website or you know, or whatever type of company you're working with. You know, you might get in once off of a great query, but it's those little skills, like you said, where you make an editor's life so much easier that will make it more possible for that editor to bring you back and to offer you more work. So I think that's great advice, and I can totally see that. You know, I don't know about Brian on his side, but I know for my side with the Writer's Market and Poets Market and stuff, you know, those are the freelancers that I go to and say, hey, I've got an opening, can you fill it, before I open up the big call. So
I agree. I think that's absolutely true. As someone who's looking for freelancers, and I do this in all stages of my life anymore, is I'm just looking for people who make my job and my life easier, because I think, and Doug will attest to this as well, it's like our lives are so busy with, you know, personal time with family, but also work and our own ambitions and dreams and the things that we do. I'm just looking for people who make, you know, the work that I need easier on me, better. And I will work with freelancers if they turn in things that I don't need to edit very much. I mean, those are the people I turn to for everything. If they send me something that needs a lot of work, and on top of that, when I edit it and send them back to proof, they come back with like a 25 bulleted point list of why I'm wrong on certain things, and I have to respond to that. You know, I'm not that interested in moving too forward with that that particular worker. I thought it was fascinating how you said that you don't think of yourself necessarily as a freelancer, but more of an entrepreneur. And I love that. I think that's a great way that anybody, especially who wants to do this, do writing for others as a career, should think of themselves. Was there a real turning point? How did you start thinking of yourself that way?
I knew that I wanted to go out on my own and try having my own business. But the freelance life can appear very exotic from afar, and I often see people fall into the trap of they have a bad day at work, and then you string together a couple bad weeks at work, you get frustrated, and you decide, I'm going to go out on my own. I'm not going to put, you know, I don't need to put up with this anymore. And you just take the leap. That to me is, that was not my approach at all. I knew I wanted to do it. I gave myself 6 months. I think it was probably more like 7 or 8 months. And I said, you know, October 2004, I'm going to go out on my own. And I saved up money. I tried to be very strategic about how I approached it. And I also tried, and this is what I, you know, if people ask my advice, this is what I share. But I picked a date. I gave myself a runway, which also, if you do that, it also helps relieve some of the initial pressure because you know that you have time to build a base of clients. You have time to, you're not going to go broke tomorrow. It just gives you some breathing room. So I think that's important. I talked with my now wife, who was my girlfriend at the time, and got her buy-in because it's a lifestyle change. It's you go from a steady income to depending on your arrangement. So for me, I was also working out of the house. That's a big change in, you know, for a lot of people to be in your home all the time. Besides just talking to those, like, you know, living with you, you know, I consulted an accountant. I consulted an attorney in setting up the LLC. I did a thorough audit of my health, life, disability insurance and thought through the implications of buying those on my own. I really think it's important to go in with your eyes wide open about what you're potentially walking into. So I would also say there were three other key things that I assessed aside from money and insurance and home office, and that's your risk tolerance. Are you cut out for uncertainty at times? It's better to think about that on the front end than make a decision and a few months in recognize, like, you know, this is giving me panic attacks. Like, figure out, like, can you handle the unknown? Assess your ability to focus. To me, probably what's a saving grace for me is I have excellent self-discipline. I've developed it, though. I did not have it initially. I really, you know, it wasn't an epic struggle, but I certainly had to work on figuring out, okay, what times of the day am I most productive? Where do I need to be at those times? When you're working freelance and out of the house and you suddenly have all of this freedom, it can really, it can really throw you if you're not setting your own deadlines. So I would set a lot of internal deadlines that have nothing to do with when an actual due date was. And then finally, I would say, I had thought long and hard about, like, are you comfortable with rejection? Can you live with that? And it's not that you don't, when you're working for someone, that you don't get regular feedback or a bad annual review or something like that. But, you really have to work on networking and reaching out to people, and not everyone is going to buy what you're selling. And even if you're selling something great, it might not be the right fit. So can you handle getting shut down? Can you handle a series of no, no, no? Eventually the yeses will come, but you need to be able, like, do you have the patience and the fortitude to sort of power through those situations? And, it's cliche and kind of corny, but, like, I always think of, I think, like, Wayne Gretzky said something like, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. And for me, at that time in my life when I went out on my own, I thought, okay, if I don't do it now, when will I? And it's never going to work if I don't give it a shot. And so I took a leap. And when I did it, I really did think of it as, okay, I'm running my own show. I need to be, I need to be as buttoned up as, like, the average business person and view it as a true LLC, not just some random guy at a coffee shop, pecking away on a keyboard.
Yeah, those are great tips. And I like the comfortable with rejection part one, especially because if you think about, like, about anything, you're not getting 100% or 1,000% of the business. you know, even Walmart has its, you know, for all the people that shop there and help support Walmart, there are so many more people that, you know, are talking bad about it and boycotting it. And, you know, and the same thing holds true with writers. You're dealing with other writers, other freelancers. So, you know, I think that's great advice. And also, you know, I'm an editor that works from home all the time. So, like, I totally, like, hear what you're saying about working from home and how that's a lifestyle change. Could you maybe talk about maybe the one or two things that really changed for you when you started working from home?
It was an interesting dynamic because my wife would come home and, you know, particularly at the you know, Thursday, Friday night, and would want to just relax at home. And I had cabin fever and just wanted to get out of the house. And that, you know, that was an interesting time because I learned, okay, I have to be very thoughtful about getting out of the house. So I got into a routine where, you know, and I do this, so this has been since 2004, like, I have meetings, I meet people, you know, I meet people for lunch, but I go out for coffee every single day. And to me, it's worth, you know, whatever it costs nowadays to get a coffee, because it gets me out and interacting with people. And it's just a chance to be out in the world, because when you are working from home, particularly when you're facing a bunch of deadlines, you know, like I painted when we moved into a new house, like I painted my office a distinctly different color than anything else in the house, because I was trying to give myself a cue, like, this is the office, the rest of the house is my home. It doesn't quite work out like that though. Like, that's the other thing I think about freelance, if you are working from home, is my wife sort of jokes, like, I have a magnet, you know, attached to me, you know, with my computer, like, it's always there. The office is always there. There's always an email to respond to. There's always a piece that I could go back and edit. And so I haven't quite won that battle. So I don't know how, like, I would be a hypocrite to offer, like, much advice beyond just be aware that working from the home, you know, working out of the house it's great. I love it. I wouldn't change it, but it comes with its whole other set of issues. I'm not smelling like, you know, Jane from Accountants, like, you know, stinky tuna casserole, or dealing with, you know, nonsense from, you know, corporate, you know, shenanigans, but I'm also isolated a lot of the time. So I think one of the things that I have found, like, throughout my career in terms of in a lot of different ways, there's good and bad to everything. There's, you know, if you work with corporations, you have a series of headaches. But if you jump and you work with startups, you're going to deal with, it'll be a totally different situation, but you'll deal with like a whole nother set of headaches. And I think that's the same situation with kind of working in an office, working from a home. There are pros and cons to both. You just need to know yourself. You need to know what charges you up, what feeds you, what gets your batteries going, and honor those.
Yeah. I work from home occasionally, and I completely understand the, I've been here all day, I've been doing this, your wife comes home, it's like, let's party, we need to do something, even get with the kids or whatever, you know, get out of the house. And she's ready to just kick it up on the couch. And I also can really relate to, you know, it's like being able to receive emails and messages on your phone has been like an amazing, amazing thing from a productivity standpoint. But it's also devastating because I'm like you, it's like 24/7. I'm available, and if I check the email and I see something, I want to respond to it. I don't like letting it fester, and I do try to set aside time. Like when the kids are home, I put the phone down, and we spend dinner time. It's like no phones, and we shut that kind of stuff off. And but I'm bad about it too sometimes, especially when after the kids are in bed, and my wife's like, "You want to watch a show or this movie that we like?" And I'm like, "Sure, it sounds good." And then the laptop sit next to me, and like somehow over the course of 10 minutes, it creeps its way onto my lap. And then I'm doing things. And then she looks at me and says, are we watching the show or are you working? And so I put it down. Of course, this whole time she's on her phone playing like Candy Crush while she's watching. So maybe there's some balance there. But you know, Robert, the other thing you said that I thought was interesting, and I'm curious if Robert's done anything like this, because I have an office at home, but it's also our playroom. But since you work at home all the time, Robert, Doug said that he had painted his room a drastically different color to set it apart. Do you do anything like that?
It's funny. I thought that was actually kind of an interesting advice to do that. But yeah, my office is actually – I always hear people say like kind of section it off or whatever, but mine is kind of organically in with the rest of the house on the main floor. And I don't know. I've got like a standing desk. That's a little bit different, I guess. But nothing as far as setting it off. I do totally get the whole like magnet thing, though. There'll be times where, you know, I'm getting something for the kids in the kitchen, and then I just happen to wander around over to where the computer is and just happen to check my email. And then, you know, my son or daughter is asking for their chocolate milk that I originally went up to go get. So I totally get that.
Gotta get that chocolate milk.
Yeah. It's a total lifestyle change. And I think, you know, no matter what you do, there's going to be a little bit of conflict as far as that. I'm definitely a lot better than I used to be with, you know, working all the time. I actually put myself in the hospital first year I was working from home. Because I wasn't, I was actually working 24-hour days at times. So I guess, you know, one of the things, it sounds like, you know, you're really on top of things, Doug, as far as like kind of like motivating yourself and getting things done. I wonder if you have like any like organization tips for like freelancers, people who are out there and freelancing and trying to get stuff going.
If you're talking about desk organization, absolutely not. You said you have a standing desk. I have a desk I can't stand. It's just like everything is piled everywhere. I have spent the last probably at this point, it's before my son was born, the last 8 years plotting how every Friday or Saturday I was going to finally clean it up. And it remains as messy as it has always been. But, you know, in terms of organization, it's one of those situations where like, I know where everything is, so it doesn't matter, but it, you know, we close the door when people come over. But I think in terms of organization, I don't do everything digital, but you know, I have things in an Outlook calendar. I do have things digital, but I also, and this is kind of old school, but I have an appointment book and I write things down with my pen. There's something about like circling like 2 p.m. on a Tuesday and also writing it down that sort of cements it in my head. And so I don't miss deadlines. I don't miss meetings. I don't miss conference calls. I try to build in safeguards where, you know, if technology fails me, I have a backup. I think that's probably less common today, but in regard to just organization and staying on top of things, I just have notes. I think it all comes down to, in a lot of ways, and Brian mentioned this in terms of like working with people that make his life easier. It's like, it's credibility, and people like to work with people they like and that whom they respect. And you know, everyone will grant you, especially if you're starting your freelance career, you know, it's important to make all those deadlines, to make any calls you're on, to be proactive and, you know, give yourself reminders of when to follow up with people. And people, you know, people are human. Editors are happy to grant you some leeway and give you a chance. But if there's one too many misses, it all comes down to your reputation and credibility. And I think, you know, being well organized, being on top of things, you know, not offering excuses, you know, if something falls through, and just being accountable. I think those are, it all sort of plays into being a successful freelance writer or freelance creative professional of any stripe.
All those things are absolutely true. I find the accountability thing is really important. It's grown more important to me as I get older, and I've been more honest the older I get about things. I remember being a 22-year-old, 23-year-old, just trying to make my way and really, really concerned what all editors think about every little thing that I did. And so if I were to miss a deadline, which almost never happened, I would be trying to think of excuses. And now, thankfully, I really don't miss deadlines. But if I ever were, I'm to a point where I just say, you know what, I blew it. I got caught up with other things. It's completely my fault. I hope you're willing to give me another chance. I think that's, really good advice to be honest about things and staying organized. It's funny. You also were talking about how you keep things, kind of old school with your appointment book. And I don't know where Robert falls on this spectrum. I know he carries a notepad around a lot because he's got brilliant ideas all the time and he's just got to write them down, I'm sure. But I'm kind of split on things. Like I use a Google Calendar for everything. I mean, I track everything on this. It's synced with my wife. We have sports schedules on there. I even play on a softball team. I coach the softball team and I've created the team softball schedule on there that I share as a calendar with all the other guys on the team. And so that kind of stuff, I need it so it reminds me. I have half-hour reminder set up. Now, old school, I always make to-do lists, and I always do them on notepads. Yep. And I have to write them out. I feel like if I write them out, it, like you said, it kind of prints it in your mind and allows you to do it. Plus, to be honest, there's a lot of things that are gratifying, and one of them in my life is being able to cross something off the to-do list, even if it's the first item that says make to-do list, you know what I mean? So yeah. I find that to be a little cathartic throughout the day when I get down to the end of the day and I see, even if everything's not crossed off, at least a big chunk, because you feel like you're accomplished, and you spend so much of your day doing emails and connecting and all that, that it's nice to know that you have been working and you've gotten a lot done.
I think there's a lot to be said for that. I really do. And I think I'm built the same way where, particularly as a freelancer, when, there's not always a hard stop to the day and you're also not getting, well, there are bumps along the way, but there may not be as many check-ins along the way. Like if you had a monster sized assignment, sort of like Anne Lamott's Bird by Bird, you've got to like break things down into digestible chunks. And for me, if I have a major assignment, I have to write down a to-do list, break it into little tasks so that at the end of the day, I have things that I can cross off. And there is something like, I think people are sort of emotionally wired to, that crossing off of something from a list is just, I think it is a little reward and activates a part of the brain that just sort of keeps the momentum going. And so to-do lists, breaking big projects down, tracking, anything you can do to sort of like, track your success, and success doesn't mean you've completed it, you've sold it. It just means getting through part of something that's part of a bigger project. So, yeah, I'm also a big fan of that.
Yeah, totally. And I know that our listeners can't see it, but I'm going to hold up here this composition notebook that every 3 months is broken up into a composition notebook. Each page of the notebook is a day. And, I'm totally with you guys on the old school, crossing stuff out. Do so much stuff online, blogging, this podcast, so much technology surrounding me. When it comes down to like managing how I do all that, I'm as old school as you possibly can get with the paper and pen. And, I don't think I'm ever going to change as far as that, even though, my wife loves to do all their stuff online, is always trying to recruit me into the dark side as far as that. I just can't do it. I can't download an app to start doing that stuff. We're getting kind of near the end, but we haven't even gotten to the creative group where you work. And I am so interested in, what the creative group does, how they work. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners would love to hear about, one, what is the creative group? Like, what do you all do? And then what with your role, how does that work as far as, recruiting freelancers and, working with them?
So the creative group I'll start with the creative group blog, which launched in June of 2013. And we write and produce content for in the career space. So if you are a freelancer, a job seeker, an employer, a hiring manager, there's content for you. We try to give very actionable, tip-oriented advice that can make your life easier, make your job search easier, make your search for a job candidate easier. So, and we also focus heavily on creativity and how can you be more productive? How can you be more creative? How can you be more innovative? So we have a lot of posts where we will interview thought leaders in the marketing, advertising, design space, public relations. We're doing a campaign. We do a lot related to our annual salary guide, where we'll dive deep and do we'll look at different creative positions, give a pretty detailed job description, and also what the forecast is for starting salary for that job and what prospects look like. I try to keep like a really good mix of content that, we do a fair amount of pieces geared towards content strategy, copywriters. But there's also a lot of design. The creative group is a staffing agency, and we're in many markets across the U.S. And we make placements. We connect job seekers with employers looking for either temporary help, permanent help, and we kind of talk to both audiences on the blog. My goal is to not only produce interesting content and position us as a thought leader and, a place where you can go to not only better your career, but find some compelling information, but also like sort of suck people in and drive them to our website. So, people looking to better their careers, can reach out to one of our recruiters and maybe get placed, or a hiring manager can reach out and find one of our candidates.
That's great. Sounds like you're doing a lot to really connect people, and that's ultimately what in this industry it's all about, connections over time. You can reach out and blindly do things, but the more you connect with others and you get to know them, you'll be in good shape. And that sounds like a lot of what your group does. So. That's wonderful. Well, we're starting to get short on time here, but I don't want to miss out on one of the features of our podcast, of this Writer's Market podcast. It's one of my favorites. It's called the 10 Question Blitz, where I have a mix of tip-oriented questions and just kind of fun questions. And I'm going to put our good friend here, Doug, on the hot seat. Doug, are you ready?
I'm nervous, but yes.
Good. Don't be nervous. Don't be nervous. I swear. We don't bite her. Anyway, all right. It is time for the 10 Question Blitz with Doug White. Here we go.
Number one.
What's more essential to your writing? Coffee, exercise, or sleep? Coffee. That was easy.
That's a new record.
I know. 90% of writers agree. No one says sleep anymore.
Yeah. Number two.
Do you have a place where you like to go outside of your home office to get work done? And if so, what's special about it?
Coffee shop. And coffee. Yeah, I try to get out of the house more frequently now. So going to I have a favorite coffee shop called Deeper Roots here in Cincinnati, and that's my go-to spot for when I do go out of the house.
Great. And for our listeners, Doug and I occasionally go out to lunch. We always have a good time just chatting shop and chatting family, and it's always great. So.
Number three.
What's the most challenging freelance assignment you've ever received topic-wise, and what did you learn?
Ugh.
Challenge that, extended.
That's a good one. Okay, I'm not trying to be opaque here, but I think it's, this speaks, this is a good question. It speaks to, I think, what makes a successful freelancer, which is you've got to be comfortable being out of your element and quickly learning about any number of things that you would have, you know, no idea about. Like at one point I did some medical writing and I wrote a piece about Barrett's esophagus, which is a condition that I had never heard of before. I've written, in-depth pieces for the legal field and accounting, areas of which that's not my background. I think to make it as a freelancer, there are times when the assignment you want is not the assignment that is currently available to you. And that's okay. You need to embrace it, and you just need to research skills are pivotal, and you need to learn quick. I don't know that I could name one. There have been so many.
That's all right. I think that may have been one of the – we've had a lot of great answers to these Blitz questions over time, but that may have been one of the most thoughtful and really helpful answers we've ever gotten, so thank you for that.
Number four.
As someone who works from home, how do you convince your kids that you don't sit around watching TV all day?
Oh, man. I don't. My son is going on 8, and I think he gets it now. He did not for the first couple of years. It was just like, why? I'm going to daycare and you're going back home? Like, what?
does seem odd.
Your 8-year-old daughter, and I think she's sort of in that space too. And I don't know that you can explain to a 3-year-old that you're going home to work. It just, you just go and you feel like a bad parent.
I have trouble convincing my wife sometimes when I work from home, because she'll come home and the dishes are still in the sink and she'll look at me like, well, you were home all day. And I would say, whoa, 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 I was working all day. It's not like I just hung out, you know, watching Breaking Bad.
No, this is going to get me in so much trouble, but this is going on 12 plus years, but it's the perennial issue with my wife where like a service person will come to the house, or, you know, it's always like I'm the guy who handles that stuff. And, you know, just like you said, with like dishes or something needs to be done. And it's like, no, I was at my computer working. Like I have a job just like you. I just happen to be here. So that's another thing. If you are going freelance, like when I said talk, you know, at the beginning, like talk to your significant other, like it shouldn't by default be, everything shouldn't fall on the freelancer.
Agreed. 100% agreed.
Number 5.
If you weren't a writer, what do you think you would be and why? And I know this may be a challenging question since you've known for a long time that you wanted to write.
I think I would probably, at this point, probably be a business owner of some other sort. I keep going back to coffee. Like, probably like be a own a coffee shop or run a coffee. I just like, I don't know. I like being around people. And I think coffee is like a huge connector for people. And it's, I feel very comfortable in coffee shops. And it seems to, anyone who says coffee isn't a drug is also crazy. Like, coffee just makes people happy. It also makes them sane. So I would probably be involved with the coffee industry in some way.
It's funny. I actually know a poet in Hickory, North Carolina, who I think he had like a daily routine where he went to a coffee shop, who he now owns that with his wife and they run a coffee shop. So the one that he would visit all the time. So there is precedence for this.
Yeah.
this is Doug's future after he finishes off making his millions from the freelance career, because, you know, we all make millions from freelance careers. He's going to retire and run a coffee shop. And you're very organized, so I'm sure you do incredibly well.
Number 6.
What book do you recommend that people should read?
This is like the nerdiest answer of all time. I'm a big fan of The Synonym Finder. Like, I hate echoes in writing, especially my own writing. So long before there was, you know, online dictionaries, I have like this, it's probably, I don't know how old it is. It's old, but it's a copy. It's a broken, beat up copy of the Synonym Finder. And I refer to it so often that I will, without shame, say that is my favorite book.
I love finding synonyms. I love doing that because I hate actually, quickly, but can you define for people when you said echo writer, can you define that?
So if when you have the word communications in a sentence and then a sentence later communications again and then like another paragraph down it appears again, like I don't know. I'm really drawn to like descriptive, varied writing. So whenever I'm editing, and this is just like, you know, my own pet peeve, I'm always like highlighting echoes. So synonyms are my friend.
Yeah, agree. Thanks for that explanation.
Also my pal.
Yeah.
Good acquaintance.
Yes.
Number 7.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how stressful would you describe a freelance career?
I don't know. I think it varies by person. I would go with middle of the road 5, but I think it really matters. It's really your temperament and personality and risk tolerance. But I think it's great. I mean, I really do. So I'll go middle of the road and say 5.
Number 8.
You've been stranded on an island, and lucky for you, you have the single most important item that you need. What is it? Not including wife and kids. We'll rule them out. We'll assume they're there with you.
My phone.
Yeah. It's depressing, but that's mine too.
My phone.
How about you, Robert?
Oh, man. I wasn't even thinking about phone. I was trying to debate whether I wanted the pen or the paper.
Well, you use a stick in the sand. I think that's
how
you
have to write
things.
I guess that's the way. Yeah.
And pray for no rain. So yeah.
Find a cave so I can do little drawings. And,
Can't do Snapchat in a cave, man.
Absolutely. See, this is why the phone is so valuable. You know, I know it seems expensive for the phone, but God, you feel like you pay double. You can't just get rid of it. So
number 9,
most important question of the day, the movie Love Actually. Do you love it or do you hate it?
Hate it.
Oh man. See, I'm on the left side.
It's also not a Christmas movie.
It's totally a Christmas movie.
It's not.
This is a battle that I get in every Christmas. I get in long Facebook chat battles about this, and I love it. Everybody's so adamant and opinionated. This is great.
Number 10.
Give us one of the most important pieces of advice you can offer to anyone who is considering making freelance writing a full-time career.
Be brave. If you've thought through, if you've really thought about it strategically, and you can answer yes to a bunch of the questions that I referenced earlier about saving money and, you know, if you can make it work and you're on the fence, just do it. I mean, you might ask the questions and it just might be like, I just don't know if this is for me. But if you think it is, but you're not quite sure, I just say go for it. It's rewarding. Like being your own, you know, essentially being your own boss, running your own show, control of your own destiny to some degree. You know, if it doesn't work out, you can always go back into, you know, you can always like jump back in to, you know, the career path that you were on. But if there's just a hint of doubt and you know, your gut is telling you to do it, don't psych yourself out. Just do it.
That's great advice there to end on. I always feel I feel that people don't take enough risks and they're not brave enough to go forward. It's kind of like to me, I grew up in Cincinnati, and as I was in college and everything, I decided I did not want to be in Cincinnati all the time. I wanted to experience something else, and it was important for me to go to another big city and get those experiences. And, you know, my wife and I, my girlfriend at the time, we moved to Chicago without jobs, and we wanted to take that jump. And we did, knowing that You can always go back. We could always come home. You can always go back to that 9-to-5 job or whatever it was. It may not be the same job, but you can always go back and fall back on something like that if it doesn't work out. So I thought it was very important. That's a very important piece of advice you've given to our listeners. And I, you know, thank you for that. Robert, you have anything else?
No, it's been a great talk, Doug. Thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, guys, thank you so much for having me. And if listeners want to check out the Creative Group blog and just Google that, that'd be great.
Thanks, Doug. Thank you so much for being on here. You've been great.
Have a good day, guys.
Okay, so that was a really great interview with Doug. Do you have any takeaways from that, Brian?
Yeah, he had a lot of great things to say. I really learned a lot about the freelancing side of things and the motivation and how to do it. What I found most interesting was when he said that writers have to stop thinking of themselves as just freelance writers and think of yourself as an entrepreneur. You're not just writing for people. You're a small business owner, you know, managing clients, workload, and your own image. And that's important. It's important to have that mindset so you recognize that everything you do or need to do in order to sustain a successful freelance career. If you don't think of yourself in those terms, you may have a difficult time moving forward and accomplishing everything you need to accomplish to find success. That's what really stuck out to me. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, that was a great point. And, you know, I think a lot of writers, you know, myself included, you know, it's like almost like you got these different stages of being a writer where, you know, at first you're really so focused on the craft and stuff. And while that's important, yeah, that business side is so important. But what I really took away was there was a point where Doug was talking about kind of like the three qualities that freelancers need. And the first one was having this risk tolerance because, you know, basically you're going out there and you're not assured of anything, any kind of paycheck. So you really have to have that risk tolerance that I'm sticking myself out there and I believe in myself that I can produce assignments and I can produce money. And then the second one was ability to focus, which is so important because, you know, you don't have somebody else checking up on you and holding you accountable. You have to do that for yourself. And the third one was being comfortable with rejection. Because it happens, and if you're not comfortable with rejection, you're going to have a hard time freelancing. Because if you get rejected, you're still going to have to keep sending stuff out and submitting and trying to get those assignments. So you can't get distracted and spend even a day or an hour wasted on rejections. You have to keep moving. So I thought those were three great qualities that freelancers need, and I agree with all of them.
Yeah, me too, especially the rejection thing. If you can't get past rejection in this business, in the publishing industry, whether you're freelancing, whether you're writing novels, whether you know, you're doing copywriting projects, I mean, you will have a tough time surviving. You need to be able to accept that not everybody is going to want what you are offering, or you know, even all the way down to book reviews. We all kind of get that rejection badge of honor on our sleeve, and that's part of being a writer and moving forward. So anyway, I want to thank Doug White for coming on the program and discussing the ins and outs of freelancing full time. From Robert Lee Brewer and me, Brian A. Clems, thanks for listening to the Writer's Market Podcast. Come visit us at writersmarket.com and writersdigest.com. And don't forget to stop back next time for more great publishing advice. Until then, take care of yourself and your writing.